When actor Dudley Moore died last month, most people remembered him for his work in American movies like Arthur and Ten. But Moore's comic roots go back much further. He burst onto the stage in 1960 as a member of the groundbreaking comedy revue Beyond the Fringe.
Mr. Spigot?
Yes, Spigot, the name, Spigot by name, Spigot by nature.
Beyond the Fringe didn't have any of the standard trappings of British comedy revues, no dancing girls in fishnets or corny musical numbers. Just four guys in gray cardigans making extremely rude cracks about Harold Macmillan, the Prime Minister at the time, among other targets.
Macmillan? Macmillan?
Do you know I think he's got something?
It was the first time English audiences had seen satire of this kind, and it kicked off a fad that lasted for years. Humphrey Carpenter is the author of A Great Silly Grin, the British satire boom of the 1960s. He joins us now from Oxford, England. Welcome, Mr. Carpenter.
Hello, thanks very much.
Mr. Carpenter, tell us what caused satire to catch on so strongly.
Well, British humour during the 50s had been gradually moving towards a more satirical point than it had had originally. I mean, the war ended in 1945, and at first it was just radio variety shows with very sort of red-nosed music hall-style comedians. But during the 50s, in student circles, almost schoolboy circles, there was a sort of feeling that comedy could do more than that, could cut a little ice, could change the world a little bit. So it was really at the coming onto the professional stage, when the show was first staged in 1960, of something which had been brewing up for 5 or 6 years beforehand.
You give Beyond the Fringe credit for introducing satire to England, but 10 years earlier, The Goon Show was doing similar stuff. What made Beyond the Fringe so different?
Well, it was doing similar stuff in that obviously the goons were satirical. I mean, you get characters like Major Bloodnock, oh, it's too hot in there, who was obviously a spoof of the kind of army officer that Spike Milligan had served under. But there was also a strong surreal element in the goons, and that didn't really happen in Beyond the Fringe. They were aiming at targets in society. They didn't think they were setting out to be satirical, but they were. And there's very little what you might call goonish humour in it. Just a moment or two now and then when Peter Cook is doing his silly voices, you know, oh, I'd like to be a judge, rather than a coal miner, but I couldn't get the Latin, all that stuff. It's a little bit sort of Milliganesque, but mostly it's not like that. It's straight down the middle satire of the church, the law, civil defence, you know, what to do if there's a nuclear attack, put your head in a brown paper bag. There really were leaflets going around from the government recommending that sort of thing. So its targets are sharp, and it's avoiding the goonish, really.
Some of the material that you cite, though, does seem a little tame for today's standards, but what were audiences responding to in the early 1960s? What did they think of it?
Well, it's tame now, but it wasn't then. I know very well, since I was aged 13 or so and was taken to see the show by my parents. My father was a bishop in the Church of England and a very sort of correct character, but I remember him with tears of laughter streaming down his face. I mean, basic things like until Peter Cook posed on stage as Harold Macmillan, the British Prime Minister of the period. Nobody had done that. And that wonderful opening sketch from which we heard a few moments, this Macmillan stuff, that begins with Dudley Moore coming on stage and playing the national anthem, God Save the Queen. And we all stood up. We were all taken in by this. And he walks off. There's a pause. And he comes back on again and plays it again. And we all stood up all over again. It's the most brilliant kickoff of any stage show I've ever seen.
What is your favourite Beyond the Fringe sketch?
I don't have a favourite, because the thing about the show was the total impact. Well, I suppose I do, really. It has to be the sermon preached by Alan Bennett as the English parson.
And he said, "But my brother Esau is an hairy man, but I am a smooth man."
I mean, my father was a bishop. I did go to church a lot, and I did have to listen to that sort of thing a great deal.
When people in the United States often think about British comedy, they often think about Monty Python and the movies that they've done and their sketches. Do you see a connection between the Pythons and the satirists you've profiled?
Yes. It's not so much a connection as a disconnection. I saw this myself at first hand, because around about 1964, when the satire movement was rather fading away, I was an Oxford University student playing my double bass and my tuba in the pit band for the University Review. And in this cast was a young unknown called Michael Palin, who was joined on a Sunday night by another young unknown called Terry Jones. And they weren't doing Python yet, but they were already turning their backs on satire. They felt that the satire thing had been done. done, and they were looking for something different. The Goon Show was a much bigger influence on them than was Beyond the Fringe. They were instantly very, very funny in those days. I remember Mike Palin doing a sermon of his own, which was a little like the Alan Bennett one. It began, "I take as my text tonight, thou shalt not nick lead off the church roof." Acts of the Apostles, chapter 3, verse 7, and it went on like that.
Humor doesn't always travel, Mr. Carpenter. What British humor succeeds in the United States, do you suspect?
I really have no idea. I mean, I write children's books, which I think are quite funny, and some British children think they're funny, but American publishers don't want to look at them. You can't predict. I would never have guessed that Beyond the Fringe would have travelled as well as it did, but nothing happened, nothing went down quite as well as an import in the other direction, which was the late, great Lenny Bruce, whom Peter Cook booked for a turn at the Establishment Club, and he did a wonderful 2 weeks there, which everybody in the British comedy world saw and thought was hugely influential. And he came back to do another week, but the Home Secretary wouldn't let him into the country.
Why?
Well, he was thought to be a dope fiend, but mostly because he'd been extremely rude about everything. He was outrageous. He was monstrously outrageous. He used four-letter words when those weren't yet used on stage. And he did wonderful sketches like his sketch where the tobacco companies are becoming aware that lung cancer is caused by smoking. And they decide to try and persuade the public that cancer is sexy, that it's a good thing to have cancer. It's still desperately, bitterly funny sketch.
Do the satirists of the 60s, are they still relevant today, do you think?
Well, that's a good question. Is satire at all still relevant today? We've got to a point where it's the opposite of 1960, where we still believed in people like Macmillan and the Queen and the Archbishop of Canterbury and the Lord Chancellor and so on. Nowadays, we've been schooled by the media into being terribly cynical about public affairs, and there's therefore less room for satire as such. But I think it always raises its head when there are people angry enough to express themselves in comic fashion. So it'll never be lost.
Humphrey Carpenter is the author of A Great Silly Grin, the British satire boom of the 1960s. He joined us from Oxford, England. Mr. Carpenter, thanks so much.
My pleasure.